WAIF, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It is 8:04, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. The Real Stepchild Radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions or gardening questions, we invite you to write us or call the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, or call us at 513-749-1444. You call in during the show with questions for my guest. The studio line is 749-1444. I want to mention our underwriter for this program, for this hour. Today's show is brought to you in part by Kreidler Design, Paradesa, a garden design firm located at 1313 Main Street, inside Urban Eden, a shop that is a little bit of paradise in over the Rhine. These two wonderful shops in the same place can provide design and furnishings for inside your home and now inside your garden. Come visit and catch the new cicada table coverings from Provence, France, and visit this month's feature artist, Bates Webster, with her metal sculpture for the garden. Kreidler Design's grand opening will take place at this month's final Friday gallery walk on North Main Street, June 25th, from 6 until 10 p.m. Again, Urban Eden and Kreidler Design are located at 1313 Main Street in downtown Cincinnati. They're open Wednesday through Saturday, noon to 6. Their phone numbers are 513-621-3336 or 513-624-0333. Okay, thank you for coming this morning, Dr. Dallum. Welcome to the show. Now, I understand you're a Diptera entomologist, so tell us what that is.
Well, good morning, John. It's a real pleasure to be here today. I'm a Dipterist. That's someone who studies flies. Out of all the different kinds of insects in the world, flies are my particular favorite.
Well, how long have you been interested in flies?
Well, so many times I have somebody ask me, why in the world do you want to study bugs? I'm afraid I was one of those little kids growing up that ran around with a peanut butter jar catching lightning bugs.
I'm sorry, had your mic off.
Oh, had my mic off. Well, going back to what I was saying, ever since I was a little kid, I just loved bugs. Went around, caught bugs, put them in. My mom and dad have all sorts of stories about things that they found in my pockets growing up. But it was something that everyone thought I would grow out of, but I never did. And when I went to college, that's what I enjoyed the most out of everything was bugs. And so headed off to Ohio State to start my career in entomology.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. There's an awful lot of different types of flies. I saw at least part of your collection down at the Bug Fest at few weeks ago, and it was pretty impressive.
It's incredible how many different kinds of insects there are when you really take a close look at them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about today with you was mosquitoes, because they're coming on pretty strong this year already, I guess, and with the West Nile virus out there. What can you tell us about mosquitoes?
Well, the mosquitoes are starting to get bad in my backyard. I know that for sure. certainly, this is a time of year as people are spending more time outside, going out to parks, having picnics,
going out with their kids to play soccer or whatever, that mosquito bites are a problem. Now, none of us want to get bit ever if we can. Certainly, some people get more itched than other people, but with this recent move-in of West Nile virus into the area, it becomes even more important to protect yourself and your family from getting bit by mosquitoes. Even though the chance of getting West Niles, I must say, is very low, still, why take the risk and you don't want to get bit anyway?
Sure, sure. Well, mosquitoes, mosquito means little fly, doesn't it, in Spanish? Isn't that where the word comes from?
I'm not sure.
Well, it is a fly. It is a diptera.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
And they have a kind of an unusual life cycle. I mean, why do they bite anyway?
Well, again, with mosquitoes, one of the interesting things about them is only the females will bite. The males just live on nectar, feeding off flowers and things like that. Uh-huh. Actually, the females will feed on some nectar too, but in order for their eggs to develop, once they've mated, they need a protein meal. And that protein meal usually consists of a nice meal of blood.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that people don't really realize, though, is there are many different kinds of mosquitoes around. And they're not just generalists. They don't just run around hunting for people in particular. Many of these things like to feed, if they can, on certain kinds of animals. And ones, when we're talking about West Nile, the main vector, the mosquito, not all mosquitoes can carry West Nile. Only certain species of mosquitoes can actually transfer the virus to a person.
Okay.
And those mosquitoes that can would prefer to eat birds. They prefer bird blood, and it is only when, by accident, they run into a human or a horse or a dog or mm-hmm. whatever, and they're hungry and there are no birds around, that's when they'll take their second choice mammal blood.
So one of the things you could do, I guess, to protect yourself is keep a lot of birds around.
Well, one of the problems with West Nile, and this is one of the things that kind of tips us off to West Nile being in the area, is that it will cause the death of certain birds that it encounters. As a matter of fact, one of the main things that they've been hunting for and health departments have been asking for the public to help out with is if they find dead birds, particularly crows and uh-huh. blue jays inside of their yard. West Niles is very deadly to many different kinds of birds, but in particular the group of birds that encompasses crows and blue jays. So if you find one of those, that's the kind of thing that should be turned into the local health department, and they will do testing to see if that bird died uh-huh. as a result of West Nile virus.
Okay. There's a web page, if I can find it here, that really had a lot of information. It's the web page is West Nile Virus, all one word, .nbii.gov, which stands for National Biological Information Infrastructure. And I stumbled across that put in West Nile Virus on Google and found this one. It's got all kinds of information on it about the West Nile Virus and where it's popped up. And there are no human cases in Ohio yet this year that have been confirmed, but of course there were last year, and it's in just about all the states now, so it's spreading around.
Actually, there's another great website to check out is if you look at the Ohio Department of Health's vector-borne disease. If you were to type in vector-borne disease uh-huh. Ohio into a Google search, you would come up with that. They have a whole series of web pages that deal not only with West Niles, but other viruses that mosquitoes have been found to carry. They have maps of Ohio uh-huh. county by county that you can click on, and it'll tell you how many cases or what they found positive.
Sure.
Two mosquito pools for Hamilton County have tested positive so far, at least uh-huh. on their webpage for 2004 for West Niles. But you can check out any of a variety of different diseases that are carried by insects from those pages that from the Ohio Department of Health.
Okay. Well, these mosquitoes that carry the West Nile, they are certainly around here, and they feed on, or they like to live and breed in dirty water, as I understand it, as opposed to clean water.
Exactly. One of the best things that they like is water that has decaying leaves and
yeah.
things like that in it.
Yeah, so most of us gardeners probably have something like that in our yard.
Well, step one to helping yourself not get bit by mosquitoes is to go around the yard, look for anything that can hold water, and turn it over. Get that water out of it. Just the other day, I found the old Frisbee that somebody had thrown
oh, yeah.
under a bush. And what did I find? Hundreds of mosquito larvae swimming around in the water contained in an old Frisbee.
Well, now, what their life cycle is such that you should do that, what, every couple of weeks?
Certainly. And if you go through and hunt for anything that can hold water, get rid of it if you can.
Uh-huh.
There are other things that you can't really. I keep some tropical plants out
yeah.
on the back deck, and at the bottom of those are those plastic
sure.
water trays
right.
or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I never thought much about it, but last summer I kept getting bit up by mosquitoes. I had searched everywhere, and what did I find? I forgot to look in those plastic containers at the bottom of the
yeah.
the plants out
yeah.
on the deck, and they were just loaded with mosquitoes.
Wow.
So with something like that, yeah, every week or so, you want to go out and
okay.
dump the water out of there and
see,
let it get dry.
In our garden, we've got some of the just shallow dishes with water in them because they're attractive and decorative, and they feed the butterflies and the birds like them. And we've got some of those all over the place. But normally when we water, we replace that water. So
right, even bird baths, if
yeah.
once a week you go out and
sure.
just spray it with the hose, get rid
yeah,
of the old
they
water.
Don't, they don't do anything in moving water.
Right.
So
that's another group of mosquitoes.
Yeah. Oh, is there another group that does that?
Oh, yeah. There's mosquitoes that'll get into creeks and things like
oh,
that.
Okay.
And another place where these mosquitoes come into play, but even if you clean up your yard, most of the time these mosquitoes won't fly very far from where they are hatch out of. But everyone's got sewers along their
oh,
house.
Yeah, sure.
And down in those sewers
sure.
is an excellent breeding place for
mm-hmm.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah, so they're around. It's hard to get rid of them.
Yeah, no matter how much you do your cleanup of the yard, there's doesn't mean you're going to be mosquito free.
I read as the species of mosquito that has the West Nile virus is one called Culex pipiens. Is that
yeah? Culex pipiens.
Culex pipiens. Okay, and it's kind of a wild critter. The adult walks on water, for one thing, which and it senses heat, and it can fly about 3 miles an hour. Now, somebody doesn't have enough to do if they're measuring how fast mosquitoes fly. But the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting about it is the male has sex organs on the wrong side after they emerge, and it takes about 2 days for them to rotate it. And I don't know whether that's true or not.
Well,
but they use swarm markers, like treetops or a steeple or something like that. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, they hunt for particular sort of markings in the environment, things that they can kind of pick out, and the males will form these swarms. Where you may come across a whole bunch of these mosquitoes sort of in one area in a little cloud bobbing up and down,
mm-hmm.
and they are entirely male.
Wow.
Into that, a female will fly, a virgin female will fly into this mad swarm, and once she flies in, whatever male is best able will fly down and grab her. They actually recognize the female. There's a different frequency to the wing beat.
No kidding.
Their wings beat incredibly fast for them to fly. So that whine you hear when a mosquito gets up near your ear sort of gives you an indication of what those... That female has a special song she sings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty interesting. You were mentioning the dishes under the containers.
Yeah.
A lot of people have tropical plants that they put out in the summertime and then bring in the house at the end of summer to overwinter them indoors.
Right.
And you can actually bring those in the house. And if you've got a sump in the basement or, I guess, anywhere... Drain, maybe? I don't know.
Well, it's just a good idea.
They can over in the house.
Good idea to pull your plants out, wash those.
Yeah, when you bring them in. So
before you bring them in.
Yeah, because the mosquitoes will keep going if the climate's right, won't they?
I'm not really sure if they really keep going. What you'd get is any that are already larvae or pupa would come out and bite you in the house or whatever. A lot of these mosquitoes overwinter. Sort of in a dormant form.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not really sure how much temperature has to do with that as opposed to day length and some other environmental cues that tell them that it's time to kind of go into diapause or hibernation for the winter.
Okay. What other kind of diseases can those mosquitoes be involved with? No, we don't currently have malaria and yellow fever in this part of the country, but there's certainly in other parts of the world where that's a major problem.
Right. Well, with West Niles, again, one of the things with West Niles is it's very rare. If you get bit, most people never get sick from it.
Right.
If you do get sick, most of the time, it's just a little bit of fever, flu-like symptoms, and it is only in the really extreme cases. Although when you hear on the news, that's what you hear about, are the people that die or are paralyzed or things like that. But for most people, it is a nuisance. It's not something that's deadly. It mainly strikes or it appears to have the worst effects for people over 50. So the older population and for people who have problems with their immune system, perhaps that are on chemotherapy or organ rejection drugs, non-rejection or whatever, but who's had a transplant recently or certainly someone with AIDS or HIV, anything that would compromise the immune system would make you more at risk.
Yeah.
Now, another virus that is always around here and seems to strike just a few people each year is a mosquito-borne disease called La Crosse encephalitis.
Mm.
La Crosse encephalitis is carried, again, by mosquitoes, and it affects more young children.
Mm.
One of the things that always surprised me, I used to work for the Department of Health and the Vector-Borne Disease Unit, and one summer I was in the hot room rearing mosquitoes from possible case sites and things, is the number of people who keep old tires around the house.
Yeah, I read somewhere with something like 4 billion tires in the United States.
You would not believe how many mosquitoes come out of one old tire or a tire swing. People don't even think about that if it gets water in it. Yeah, so if you have old tires around, punch holes in them.
Right.
Get a big drill, holes so that they drain that water, or you're just, even if they're not carrying disease, you don't want 10,000 mosquitoes coming out around the house or whatever. So La Crosse is one that hits younger kids. St. Louis, thank goodness, we have not had a big problem with for decades.
St. Louis encephalitis.
St. Louis encephalitis hit Ohio hard in the 70s, mid-70s.
Hmm.
with lots of cases of real bad human problems from that.
Well, that's something to worry about, I suppose, when you're in the garden. What are the symptoms of lacrosse?
Flu-like symptoms. Again, for most people, it would be very mild, but every once in a while, like I said, it just seems to maintain itself at this real low level. Every once in a while, you get a kid that gets really sick from it. And sort of like, you know, comparing it to, we know lots of people who take penicillin, but there are
some people that
are allergic.
Sure.
And why? We don't really know. But there are certain people that are more susceptible.
Well, you were talking about the West Nile. I had read that 4 out of 5 people don't even have any symptoms.
Exactly.
And I don't know how they know that. They must have tested a lot of people's blood for West Nile that turned up positive that didn't ever have any symptoms.
I think the Red Cross, I think last year, was testing all donated blood for the presence of West Nile virus. And I think, I'm pretty sure that they've recently put in a thing where they won't take your blood if you've even had a headache or a fever in the last week or something like that.
Well, I know they're testing blood for West Nile now because they don't want to pass it along through transfusions to the people.
Exactly. Very rare, but I guess last year there were a couple of confirmed cases where people came down with West Niles from a blood transfusion.
Yeah. Okay. What are some of the other things that gardeners can do besides get rid of the standing water?
Well, I've heard so many different stories about, you know, eating garlic or rubbing your body with, you know, basil or something, or this is going to keep the mosquitoes away. Probably the best thing is, once you've cleaned up the yard, watch out for the main time that they come out. That's right at dusk and at night. Okay, if you can avoid being
outside
out when they're out flying around and ready to eat.
Yeah, but that's such a nice time of day.
No kidding. The other thing is to wear clothes, long sleeve shirt, long pants, stuff that covers your skin. I always found, because sometimes in my bug collecting, I go out to places where you're going to be drained dry, practically, if you leave your skin exposed.
Oh, yeah. I found a little article somewhere. It was really kind of scary. It talked about up in Canada where they have really short summers and a lot of mosquitoes, and they said that you could stand out there and you could get attacked 9,000 times a minute.
Exactly.
And lose half your blood.
Well, I don't know about that, but
well, according to this article, that a mosquito will draw out about 1/1,000,000th of a gallon of blood.
It's amazing
if you don't
watch
smack
them eat. Actually, in my first entomology course at Ohio State, one of our lab exercises was taking a hungry female mosquito in a little plastic container, and it had a little mesh opening on it.
Uh-huh.
And underneath the microscope, we put our hand in, and we fed the mosquito.
Oh, boy.
And so we actually watched her bend her mouth and put it in and hunt around for a blood vessel and then fill with blood.
And they actually anesthetize.
Well, their spit is what causes the itch. When they land on you and they bite you, it's not the bite that causes the itch. Rather, it's an anticoagulant.
The
proteins in the mosquito. So you can think of the mosquito spits in you a little bit when it bites you, just to keep the blood flowing good.
Yeah, and that's where the disease happens.
Yes.
Is from the saliva.
Right.
Basically. Yeah.
For most of the things that mosquitoes carry,
yeah,
that's exactly right. Oh, while we're talking about that, that just reminded me, we talked about human disease and the mosquitoes. But certainly one of the biggest concerns for mosquito disease around here is heartworm in dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And that is something that is very common in this area. Your dog, if you have a dog, should be tested for heartworm.
Yeah.
And it should be on heartworm
medication.
Prophylactis.
Yeah. Our little puppies are. That's their favorite treat, actually. So, okay. I think I'd like to take a little break here for a minute. Do a couple of other things. It's about 8:29, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. This is your host, John Duke, and Dr. Gregory Dalem on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday from 8 to 9. Now, today is the longest first day of summer, longest day in the year, about 15 hours. And at one of the other programs, we talked about seasonal affective disorder, which is depression and other symptoms caused by lack of light. And so anybody who's got seasonal affective disorder ought to be happy today. The other thing is that, you know, a lot of people don't like the hot weather. But looks like today and this week is going to be really pretty nice. We're going to have some clouds, which is good gardening weather. And so it's time to get out there and do the other thing that comes in the summertime, and that's weeds. Actually, prehistoric humans probably recognized that there were plant competition, and they probably weeded to give useful plants room to grow. And this might have very well been that weeding was the first step toward agriculture. And you all know what weeds are. It's the definition I've always heard is it's a plant that grows where it's not wanted. Well, I've run across just recently another definition of weeds, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of a garden tip, maybe. A weed is a plant whose seeds need light to germinate, because most crop plants don't need light to germinate. And this has given people the idea of plowing their fields at night. And they did some research on this. They took a field and they plowed it, one half of it in the daytime and another half on a moonless, dark night. And they didn't plant crops. They just wanted to see what the weeds would do. And it was interesting because the one that was plowed in the daytime got 80% weed coverage, and the one that was plowed at night got 2% weed coverage. Now, that's a pretty impressive difference, I think. And it's not necessarily easy to do because you have to use infrared lights and night vision goggles on your tractor and whatnot. But you can certainly save a lot of herbicides doing that. And so, in honor of on this first day of summer, I have a piece of music I want to play that's a little interesting and maybe even hotter than we have here in Cincinnati this time of year. But it's a piece by Glenn Frey in his CD called Strange Weather, and the name of the tune is Long Hot Summer. So let's listen to that. Okay, that should get everybody ready for the long, hot summer here in Cincinnati, which I'm sure we'll get to very shortly. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, John. I'm just happy to be here, happy to be on the radio.
Good, good. You've got a couple of public service announcements and a promo to read there?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great.
Well, I said I'm happy to be on the radio, and we have to remember that WAIF has many different types of programs, and on Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock, there's a program called Cutting the Grass, and that's where you can hear the best traditional bluegrass every Saturday morning from 8 to 11 a.m. on the Cutting the Grass show. Your hosts, Lee Elliott and Moonbeam, will feature the music of Bill Monroe, the Stanley Brothers, Jimmy Martin, the Osborne Brothers, and many others each week. Tune in to WAIF on Saturday morning starting at 8 a.m. for the finest mix of bluegrass music. And now, for those of you who like to volunteer, the Cincinnati area senior citizens need drivers to volunteer one or two days a month. For more information on volunteering for the Cincinnati area senior citizens, call 721-4330. Once again, 721-4330. And we're talking about mosquitoes today, and a lot of people, when they think of bugs, the first thing they think of is pesticides. And there are people who use pesticides and chemicals in their home, and one of the things we have to think about is waste. What do you do with the containers once you're finished with them? Well, what you should do is call Hamilton County's Household Hazardous Waste Hotline at 333-4700 to find out more about where and how you can safely reuse or recycle your hazardous products. The Hamilton County Department of Environmental Services has a list of locations that accept various types of household hazardous wastes, including pesticides, for reuse, recycling, or proper disposal.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Pick some good ones out there. Okay. Dr. Dallum, we just talked about pesticides. Do you use insect repellents when you go out?
I do. Whenever I head out to some place where I think mosquitoes will be around, I certainly use some kind of mosquito spray, off. The thing is, you want to use one with DEET.
Right.
DEET. And that is the only chemical that's really been shown effective to keep mosquitoes off.
There's a number of different concentrations of DEET that you can get. I've got some at home that I think is 23%, and somebody told me they saw some that was 40%.
Oh, and you can even get it even higher than that, pure DEET. It is something you might use if you're going into an area like you were talking about
in Canada.
Canada, where the mosquitoes are out to drain you dry. But most of the time, something less than 30%.
Works. This stuff that I've got advertises that it covers for protection for 8 hours. And as I understand it, that the concentration of DEET, it all works, but the higher the concentration, the longer the protection lasts. And so on that one data point, 23% should last 8 hours, which is pretty good for gardeners.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you do have to watch out for children. They don't recommend using DEET more than about 10% on children. And for kids that are under 2, you really need to talk to your doctor before you put DEET on them. And I've noticed at least one of our neighbors with a baby carriage, it's a stroller, and they put some netting over it.
Which
is a good idea. I think they probably took some of the netting, the fine netting that they had for the cicadas, and put it on the stroller. I don't know. I'm trying to get a little secondhand use there, recycling something. But, DEET's the one to get, and there's a number of different brands that carry DEET, but it's, I haven't been bitten by a mosquito this year because I put it on in the morning when I go out in the garden, and if I need to in the evening, I might you know, if I might put a little more on, but I haven't been bitten yet this year.
You just have to be careful to really get the areas that is exposed covered
right.
by the DEET. One of the places that's difficult is your head. You don't want to spray that DEET, just spray it in your face or whatever. But if you remember to spray it in your hands and then wipe your hands
sure.
on your face
get
and
your
neck and back
and
your neck.
And, yeah.
Sometimes it helps if you're going to be out. I'm sure we've all experienced mosquitoes biting right through our shirt
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
That a little spray right on the fabric
mm-hmm.
and stuff. Normally it won't hurt.
Right.
The clothing, I'm not saying that's true for every kind of fabric,
yeah.
but that helps out, too, and it's something that people sometimes forget about.
There's one more thing I want to mention about mosquitoes, and that is there are these foggers that you can fog your garden with. And I don't do that because I think it probably damages the good insects right along with the bad ones. I don't think it's specific enough. Is that?
That's true.
Yeah.
The kinds of controls that we have for getting rid of adult mosquitoes that are already present in the yard are really pretty limited. There's, like I said, hunting for the containers, getting rid of the ones that are
sure.
breeding.
Yeah.
That's step one. But when you're trying to get rid of the adults, there are a variety of different products that are available. One thing that I would mention that, let's say I've seen zero scientific evidence to show that they work, are the sonic repellers.
Yeah, right.
You
know, it crossed my mind that they probably work like the Japanese beetle traps. They attract more than they catch.
I don't know who came up with that idea.
But they certainly would, if they get the good insects too, wouldn't they?
Well, many of the different kinds of traps that people get, like the bug zappers, the electric
yeah,
bug zappers
right.
that people hang up at night, those have been shown to mainly get non-biting, non-problem insects.
Yeah.
And that's when you hear those zaps. I think people just get a kick out of hearing the bugs fry when they hit the wiring.
Right.
The real mosquito traps, the kind that you would use if you were going out and doing research and trying to collect mosquitoes, or the kinds that are even available for homeowners, the ones that have been shown to really work are usually pretty expensive,
yeah.
probably over $500.
Oh, okay.
And that,
not for the typical homeowner.
No. Well, it all depends on how bothered you are and
I suppose.
Whether or not you really want to remove these things from an area.
Okay. Boy, we could go on talking about this for a long time. I did want to get you to talk just a little bit about ticks, because that's another thing that some gardeners can be confronted with.
Ticks are another problem. Although they're not insects, they're certainly related to insects, and we group those in with sort of insect-borne diseases or insect problems. Ticks are becoming quite a problem about this time of the year, not only for our dogs, but for our kids and for even us if we get out and are moving around, particularly in wooded areas or field areas. Ticks are so common, they're just give people nightmares to even think about them crawling up their legs. I imagine there's a number of people that are itching themselves or scratching right now, even hearing the word or thinking about a tick on them. But most people get these occasionally, and one of the biggest questions that comes to me is, what should you do to remove a tick?
Yeah.
I have heard so many different stories of people's bizarre and strange ways to remove ticks. I sometimes feel like writing a book about, or a pamphlet about, all the different things I've heard, from everything from cigarette butts to blown out matches to fingernail polish to a whole variety of different oddball chemicals and stuff that you would apply to the ticks, and that would get them to crawl out of wherever they're attached. all of those are exactly the worst things that you can do for removing a tick. Very few, but a few ticks do carry disease. They carry it in their saliva. And what happens is when you really irritate a tick by putting it in one of these near-death situations or making flame on it or whatever, is that they will often vomit under your skin. This is not something that you want to happen, and it is the best way, if they're carrying a disease, for you to get that disease.
Hmm.
The easiest way, the best way to remove a tick is simply to grasp it either with a pair of tweezers or to take a Kleenex and put it over top, grab hold of it, and pull it out. That simple thing will take care, will remove the tick properly. Your chance of getting any kind of disease that the tick is carrying is very low if you do that.
And the head doesn't stay in?
And the head doesn't stay in or burrow into your brain or do anything
and
like
then,
that.
And then after you pull it out, you put a little alcohol or something on it, I guess. To...
A little bit of alcohol, yeah, on the just place to... where the cut was.
Yeah.
The tick itself, as it turns out, if you keep that live tick, again, the Ohio Department of Health, the Vector-Borne Disease Unit, will do free testing of that tick to see if it was carrying any disease.
Some disease. Okay.
The tick has to be alive, though, in order for them to do that. But they have a whole service that's available on their webpage.
Hmm.
They have a submission form and instructions for. So if you're worried, if your kid comes in and you're worried, you know, there is Rocky Mountain spotted fever, a possibility of that. Hey, it's as far as I know, it's free to send your tick in and get a report.
It's amazing what you can find on the web, isn't it?
So
incredible. Tick.com, I guess.
It's something that most people don't know about, but.
Okay, well that's good information. In my show prep for this, did a little reading about flies because I knew you were the fly guy,
uh-huh.
And I read a fascinating story about fruit flies. A fellow by the name of McDowell.
Okay,
you familiar with him?
I think so.
He found that if you look at fruit flies' thorax, they have little bristles on them.
Right.
And different individual flies have different number of bristles.
Right.
And he got the idea, as I understand it, to segregate them into hairy flies and not so hairy flies and let them breed. And every generation he would, in the hairy fly group, he would... leave a few hairy flies and take the rest of them out. And after eight generations, he had created a family of flies that was very hairy and another family that was practically nude. And that was important, I guess, because it was one of the first steps that people realized then they could experiment with evolution in insects and using fruit flies to do that because they reproduce very quickly, I guess. They had about 15 generations a year if you treat them right. But I thought that was an interesting story. And then I got to wondering, how in the heck do you count the bristles on the thorax of a fruit fly? And then, I mean, if you kill it, you know, then you can look under a microscope. But how do they do that and then have the fly still be alive and ready to go, you know, for the next generation?
Well, fruit flies... are a wonderful experimental animal for researchers to look at these genetics problems because of this short generation time. And on how to look at these things, I know in our labs we do some fruit fly labs at Northern Kentucky University with the biology students. In some cases we gas them with a little bit of
anesthetize them.
They go to sleep for a little bit. There's a real, you know, you got to be real careful. You had a little too much.
Oh, yeah.
They're dead. A little too little, and they fly away when you're looking at them under the microscope. But
that's amazing.
And certainly one another thing, and I would imagine most of the gardeners out there have noticed this, is that insects, when it's cold outside, don't move around very fast.
Oh, yeah.
And if you stick some in your refrigerator, let them cool down a little bit, then it takes a little while for them to warm back up and move at full speed.
Okay, well, that's neat. I just answered that question I had about that fascinating story. The same book I read this in said they did also breed some fruit flies that had really curly wings. They were so curly that they practically couldn't fly. And the title of that little part of the book was An Order of Curly Flies, Please. That was pretty bad. Okay, it's getting time to start winding down here. I want to mention some upcoming events for the future here, short-term future, that gardeners might be interested in. The East Row Garden Club is going to have their 8th annual garden walk in Newport, Kentucky. They're going to have tours and live music. It's going to be on Saturday, June the 26th, and Sunday, June the 27th, from 10 to 4. And ticket sales are at the Water Tower Square at 6th Street and Washington Avenue in Newport. Now, Bruce, you live in Newport. You've been on that tour?
That's right, John. I've taken the tour, and 2 years ago my garden was on the tour.
Right.
And this year we do have 10 gardens, all within walking distance of Water Tower Square. I think the farthest one away is about 4 blocks away. So,
okay, that's pretty good, yeah.
You can walk from 3rd Street to 8th Street,
mm-hmm.
and then 3 or 4 blocks either way to see the gardens.
That's great, yeah. We've been on, that's a great tour. Everybody ought to go on that one. Another event coming up is the Civic Garden Center is hosting the 2004 Neighborhood Gardens Tour on Sunday, August the 1st. We meet at the Civic Garden Center at 2 p.m., for welcoming and refreshments. That's at 2715 Reading Road. And then we leave on air-conditioned buses at 2:30 and return at 5:30. And we'll be visiting two of the newest gardens and one of the established favorites. We'll meet the community gardeners who can show you firsthand the benefits of community gardening. You won't want to miss this tour, but you do need to make your reservation if you want to ride on the bus at the Civic Garden Center. Call at area code 513-221-0981 by July 28th. So you've got to do that this week. There's another event coming up here. Valley at the Daylilies has an open house July 5th through the 11th. They have great selections and prices on daylilies from Dan Bachman. And that's at 1850 State Route 123 in Lebanon, Ohio. You go out I-75 north to exit 32, and you head east on Route 123 about 2 miles, and he's right there on your left. It's a great place. He's got a lot of daylily selections. Okay. I just want to mention our underwriter one more time here. Today's show is brought to you in part by Kreidler Design Paradisa, a garden design firm located at 1313 Main Street inside Urban Eden, a shop that's a little bit of paradise and over the Rhine. These two wonderful shops in the same place can provide design and furnishings for inside your home and now inside your garden. Come visit and catch the new cicada table coverings from Provence, France, and view this month's feature artist, Bates Webster, with her metal sculpture for the garden. Kreidler Design's grand opening will take place at this month's final Friday gallery walk on North Main Street, June 25th, from 6 till 10 p.m. That's coming up this coming Friday. Again, Urban Eden and Kreidler Design are located at 1313 Main Street in downtown Cincinnati. They're open Wednesday through Saturday, noon to 6. Their phone numbers are 513-621-3336. Or 513-624-0333. Okay, next week, my guest on the show is going to be Jennifer Radcliffe from Greenfield Plant Farm, and we're going to talk about plant shopping. She's got some good tips on how to get the most out of your plant shopping. There are a lot of new plants every year, and we want to find out what kind of questions to ask. How do the garden stores decide which ones to select? Things like that. So she's going to be on next week. And did you know that WAIF depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We're an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIF FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org. And all programs are archived for 96 hours, also at that webpage. Dr. Dallum, I want to thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. It was very informative. And thank you, too, Bruce.
Thank you.
For being here. It is 8:57 and a half, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. And I think it's time that we played our theme music again and got ready to head out. Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 on WAIF, Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, in care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday. My guest will be Jennifer Radcliffe with great information on plant shopping. It's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. Stay tuned for One Voice and take care of yourself. Your garden needs you. Thanks for listening.
morning. You're listening to WAIF Cincinnati. This is WAIF. WAIF FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airways to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during this program do not reflect